Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, and earned a Bachelor of Arts in Drama from the University of North Carolina. Since 2011, he's been seen on Broadway in Anastasia, War Paint, Falsettos, School of Rock, Big Fish, The House of Blue Leaf, and Cirque du Soleil, Paramore. He's currently playing Captain George Von Trapp in Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music at the Asolo Repertoire Theater in Sarasota, Florida. His name? Telly Sessions. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a most amazing, talented performer, Telly Sessions. Telly, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. I'm happy to be talking to you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Absolutely. I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. I was born and raised there. And my mom was a high school English and drama teacher for many years. My dad was a bank manager at a bank in North Carolina called First Union, which I believe is defunct now. And it was the three of us and my younger brother, Zach, growing up in Charlotte for many years.
How did you get the name Telly?
Well, it's a family name. It's been in my family for quite some time. I was named after my Uncle Tally, who was my dad's youngest brother. And coincidentally enough, my Uncle Tally was also involved in the theater for many years. He was an actor and director around the country.
Tally, what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom? And other than banking, what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
I don't know that I learned anything about banking from Dad, unfortunately. I'd have more money then. The biggest thing I learned from my mom is generosity, trying to be generous of spirit and see people for who they are and what they're going through and trying to show them kindness. And from my dad, I would say integrity. He had an enormous amount of integrity. He was an incredible loyal friend. He was a wonderful father and a great brother to his brothers and sisters. And so I think generosity and integrity are the two things that I took from my parents, along with many, many other valuable lessons.
We're talking to Telly Sessions. Telly, where did you get your love for music and for singing?
You know, I have to say, I don't remember singing a lot when I was very little, but at some point I was singing somewhere. I believe it was at a baseball game, just like watching a high school baseball game when I was probably 13, 12, and some friends of mine said, "Hey, you can really sing." And I had never even thought of that before. So what's interesting is I think I developed my love of singing and music once I started doing it as a creative outlet, rather than that happening prior to that and then trying to sing creatively. I started doing it and then fell in love with it.
Music transcends religion, politics, cultures, prejudice. It transcends all obstacles. How do you explain the magic of music, the universality of music?
Well, that's a good question, and my answer would be, I imagine it's inexplicable. There is a connectivity that happens through music. I mean, I think that there is something that happens just biologically to people when they hear something that is pleasing to their ears, just the way it reverberates sonically in their system. But I think there's something that is unquantifiable about music that touches people's souls and connects all humanity in a way that very other stimuli does.
What was the first play you were ever in high school?
Well, the first play that I was ever remember being in was when I was 5 years old, my mom threw me on stage, my brother and I on stage, in a production that she was directing at her high school. It was a musical about Blackbeard the pirate called Hot Grog, and I think we were like cabin boys or something. And then the production I remember, where I remember auditioning and what it was like to be in it, was a musical musical about the life of Thomas Edison called The Electric Sunshine Man, which I did in seventh grade. I played the patent maker. So, and I think it was the next largest part other than Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison was played by an eighth grader, and I had six lines. I still remember that. Not that's important at all, but I remember it.
So tell us about your first paying gig.
My first paying gig was at the University of North Carolina. At North Carolina, there is a very well-known professional theater called Playmakers Repertory Company. And North Carolina also has a graduate program for actors. And Playmakers Repertory has a full season. And 1 year, they were looking for male singers, male and female singers, for production of the Threepenny Opera that they were doing. And they didn't have enough men and women that sang in the graduate program, so they opened auditions up to the undergraduate class, and I auditioned and was cast, and I believe I made maybe $100 a week, $150 maybe. It's been a while. But the interesting thing about that production is the director of that production was a man named Bartlett Sher, who's a Tony winner. And many years later, I worked with Bart on the national tour of the Lincoln Center Theater production of South Pacific. And because we'd worked together and because of the uniqueness of my name, he remembered me all those years later, which can, I guess, be a bad thing.
We're talking to Telly Sessions. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the first time he went to New York City and specifically saw Broadway. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Telly Sessions, who's currently playing Captain George Von Trapp in Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music in Sarasota, Florida. Telly, the first time you went to New York City and saw a Broadway production, please.
Yes. It was through a program in my high school. We had been invited to sing. Our chorus had been invited to sing in a concert at Carnegie Hall with a bunch of other choruses from and choirs from around the country. So we all got into a bus and made the drive from Charlotte, North Carolina to New York City. We stayed in the Edison Hotel, and the very first Broadway show I saw was The Phantom of the Opera. I imagine that's not too surprising. I bet that's a lot of people's first Broadway show. But it was the first time that I had been in a theater of that size with talent of that caliber, and I remember being completely entranced by the level of talent, the scope of the production, the masterful storytelling. I was hooked. And then I remember asking my mom for a recording of it when I got back to North Carolina, and she got me that and a recording of Les Miserables. And the first time I listened to them, I thought, I mean, my voice was much younger then, obviously, but I thought, hey, this is sort of how I sing, or how I want to sing. And I think that that was the beginnings of my interest in possibly at least trying to sing in musicals and be an actor, not necessarily professionally, but just something I wanted to try out to see if I had interest in it.
Speaking of which, what singers did you look up to and did you try to model yourself after as you were growing up?
Well, one was Elvis Presley, my mom and dad got me a sort of greatest hits recording of his for Christmas one year, and I wore it out. I listened to it over and over because I thought he had just the greatest way with a song.
Would you give us a little Elvis? If you don't want to do it, I understand.
All right, let's see if I can remember this. Oh, baby, let me be your loving teddy bear. Put your ring around my neck and lead me anywhere. Oh, let me be your teddy bear.
You know, he had Colonel Parker. I could be your Colonel Parker someday, you know?
Oh, all right. I'd be okay with that. We'd make a lot of money. But in terms of more legit theater singers, there's a man that I think a lot of young male theater singers will know, or at least those from my generation. His name is Anthony Warlow, and he's a very famous singer and actor in Australia. And there were lots of recordings, solo recordings of him going around that you could purchase in New York. And he had the kind of voice that I wanted to emulate. It was extremely expressive. He was incredibly deft with lyric and phrasing. He had the sort of tone that was that I thought I could at least ape or was similar to mine. But I just loved hearing him sing. And I think my understanding, and certainly my experience, is that oftentimes young singers learn to sing by copying singers that they admire. And that's sort of what I did up until the time I had formal voice training. I was just trying to replicate the mechanics of singers that I liked. And sometimes unsuccessfully, particularly if it was someone that had a higher voice than mine. But it's all, you know, it's a learning process. But those are the couple singers that I really wanted to pattern my voice after until I found out what my actual authentic voice was.
Coach Tom Izzo, you know, the legendary MSU coach.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Michigan State.
Very. I don't know if he's ever beaten North Carolina, by the way, but he says that he can see a high school player telly for 5 minutes and realize he's got it in 5 minutes. Do you know this as well when you see a young singer?
I think that you can see potential. I don't know if Coach Izzo would agree with this or not, but potential is one thing. The ability to sort of forecast that if this person has the talent to be something in any walk of life. But talent without work ethic is not going to lead you very far. I'm able to listen to a singer. I teach when I'm not performing, and I can see a performer and say, wow, they've really got the goods, but it's up to them to unlock their potential, you know, to get into class, to study, to see theater, to see film and television, to take acting class, voice lessons, dance class, to get better. But yeah, I think it's possible to see potential, certainly in young people, young performers.
What do all great Broadway performers have in common?
I think talent is a prerequisite. And the thing that I've noticed is drive. Drive and a love for what they do. Because the interesting thing about my profession is there's no linear progression. You know, it's not like you start off doing summer stock when you're just out of college and everyone ends up on Broadway in the next 5 years. Some people never do it. And there are lots of incredibly talented people that never do a Broadway show, and they're just as talented as the folks that have done a Broadway show. But what I've noticed is that the talent is a prerequisite. Everyone's talented on Broadway. It's the drive to get better and to keep working at it, because the gift that you get is the job. Meaning, like, if you get a Broadway show, then you know you work hard at it every day, and you maintain the integrity of your performance. But a lot of times, it's all the work that we do outside of the show, the classes that we take, the voice lessons that we go to, the workouts that we do, the ceaseless auditioning, that's really the job, is keeping yourself primed and ready for the opportunity. So I think that's it. It's just tenacity.
When you get signed for a major role in a new Broadway musical, walk us through the process. What happens?
Well, you'll most likely go through an audition process, and then they decide that you're the person that, I always say, you're the person that is the answer to their problem. Because that's really what they want. Every person that walks in the door, they want you to be the answer to their problem. And I think oftentimes that's what actors, young actors especially, don't understand, is it's never personal. They want you to succeed when you walk in. But if you are so lucky as to be offered a role in a new Broadway musical, you will, if you have representation, like an agent or manager, that offer will come in, and then you will probably go back and forth negotiating things like salary package and any other perks. And then if it's a, this sort of depends on the process. You know, there's multiple ways for a Broadway show to come to fruition, but I would say sort of the a tried and true method is if they're going to do what's called an out-of-town tryout in, let's say, Detroit, Michigan, you know, then they will hire you for that. It's possible that you'll get what's called right of first refusal, meaning if the show continues on in Broadway, you are guaranteed to be offered that or bought out. You'll do the process out of town and try to work out the kinks and the growth spurts of the growing pains of the show, and then there'll be some amount of time, and then they'll bring it to Broadway. You will have a 4, 5, 6 week rehearsal process in the studio. You'll have 2 weeks of a technical process. Then you'll have 3 to 4 to 5 weeks of previews, which is a process in which you are performing the show at night but rehearsing it during the day and making changes. And then you'll open, and you'll see if the people like it enough to continue to pay full-price tickets.
We're talking to Telly Sessions, who's been on Broadway with Anastasia, Wall Paint, Falsettos, School of Rock, Big Fish, on and on and on. When we come back, we're going to ask him about opening night of a Broadway musical. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Telly Sessions. Telly, take us through an opening night, please.
Opening night of a Broadway show is a very, very exciting thing because it's a combination of all the hard work of the creative team, which includes the director, choreographer, music director, the set designer, lighting designer, sound designer, all the crew that is making sure that you're safe backstage and the sets come in on time, and the spotlight operators who make sure that you can be seen, and the soundboard engineers who make sure you can be heard, the front of house who make sure that the patrons get seated efficiently and safely, the stage door people who make sure that that everything is safe backstage, and the actors. And It's a way for that entire company to say, look, we did it. We made something. I think that what's interesting is we live in a business where, at least commercial theater, the business in which I work, oftentimes its success is certainly predicated on people buying tickets, but it's also put out there for criticism by nature. I mean, there are people that make their living who come to the theater to critique it. And the thing is, while that's important to the business, no bad reception, no bad critique can take away from the fact that hundreds of people, and that's not the people that are working in the theater, that's the casting directors, the people that do the marketing for the show, the producers, hundreds of people are responsible for coming together to create this thing that no one else has done. and it will always exist in time as its own singularity. It's an incredible thing to make something. And so opening night is a celebration of the fact that you birthed something that has never been birthed before, and that is something that should be lauded and celebrated no matter how long the show runs or how well it is received by critical press.
We're talking to Telly Sessions. Telly, when you perform, you mesmerize us. You hypnotize us. You control the stage. How do you do that?
Well, you're very kind to say that. I don't know that that is that's certainly not the goal. I can only speak for myself. Everyone else has a different process. But I think that my education and training comes from the idea that you try to be as truthful as possible when you're portraying a character. You try to figure out what that character wants and the ways in which they're going to try to achieve those objectives. And so much of it is about staying outside of yourself, not watching yourself, putting your trust and your eye and ear on your scene partner or partners, not getting too caught up in what you look like or sound like if you're singing, but doing your best to give integrity and authenticity to the story you're telling. So I think that's it. You know, they always talk about someone having it, and I don't know what it is because there's different versions of it. I don't even know if I have it, but I will say that I believe in what I do. I believe that what I do has a valuable place in society. And someone said recently, you know, that because there's always a fight to make sure that the arts stay well funded. And they said, just imagine going 30 days without hearing music or seeing any art or seeing any plays or films or television or streaming services. You don't get access to your phone and all the videos on your phone. Going a month without art, because that's how interwoven it is into our society. What I do feels valuable, and I feel very fortunate to be given the opportunity to do that. And I'd be lying if I said I have full confidence in my ability to do so. It's always a learning curve. I mean, if I'm the same at the end of a process as I was at the beginning, then I never learned anything. And I can tell you that I've not once had an experience where I didn't feel changed by the end of a process. I mean, that's my goal as an actor, and it's my goal as a human being. You know, I want to constantly get better.
We're talking to Telly Sessions, and Telly, you and I met a couple of months ago through Dr. Scott and Jill Wilkinson, and Dr. Wilkinson has written a musical, a Broadway musical, about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. It's entitled Bonhoeffer, themusical.com. Tell us about Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a celebrated theologian in pre-World War II Germany. And as the Nazis came to power, he became an anti-Nazi, an anti-Hitler dissident. The thing is, and what's interesting about his story is, being a theologian and being a evangelical, he was a pacifist. But what was happening in Germany and throughout the world at that time was so abhorrent to him, the crimes against humanity that this person and his political party were making happen were so abhorrent to him that he decided that he had to get involved some way, and that meant possibly putting aside his pacifism for a time. So he was actually part of a group that plotted to assassinate Hitler, and it was unsuccessful. But his his teachings are world renowned. He's wildly celebrated. Sadly, he was executed at the end of World War II by hanging. But his impact lives on, and I believe that there's a Bonhoeffer Society dedicated to his teachings, and you know, Scott and Joe Wilkinson are so impassioned in their desire to get his story out there in the musical form. And Scott has written something that I think is deeply emotional, and it's a complicated story, but it's one I think that's very much worth telling.
Eric Metaxas wrote a book, Seven Men and the Secret to Their Greatness. The seven men were George Washington, Wilberforce, Eric Liddell, Jackie Robinson, Pope John Paul II, Chuck Colson, and Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a little bit of Telly Sessions singing one of the songs from that musical, See the World.
Gotta see the world, every diamond, every pearl, and see the world. Time to venture out alone and find a place to call my home. To see the buildings scrape the sky and taste the best corned beef on rye, the limousines, the fancy clothes, the dazzling lights of Broadway shows, where freedom sparkles and it glows, and see.
Was Telly Sessions singing a portion of See the World. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Telly Sessions. If you wanted to learn more, Bonhoeffer, Bonhoeffer, themusical.com. You're currently in Sarasota performing The Sound of Music.
That's right.
Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote it over 60 years ago. It's like Phantom of the Opera in a way. How do you explain the greatness and the length?
Well, I think just in terms of the catalog of Rodgers and Hammerstein, I mean, they were the forefathers of the book musical as we know it, where scenes in the book led into songs because those characters had to sing, and the lyric of the song was related to the character's journey and their attempt to achieve something, and the songs always, sort of similar to what we were just speaking about, they always ended with the character being in a different place than they were at the beginning emotionally. That's true of Oklahoma, which was the first piece, Carousel, South Pacific, certainly, Flower Drum Song, and The Sound of Music. And these, I will say, you know, a lot of people know The Sound of Music because they grew up watching the film. And while the story is the same in the musical, it feels more adult in a way. I think oftentimes The Sound of Music, when they think of it, people think of it as sort of like sugary, and so it's kids and yodeling. And what it really deals with is a man who is broken by the loss of his wife. He's disillusioned by the political party, the Nazi party, that is starting to appropriate his homeland in Austria and the rest of Europe. And he is saved, he and his children are saved by this woman who comes in and leads with her whole heart, her kindness. And he is taught through music, coincidentally enough, to learn to love again and to open his own heart and mind. And one thing that we have discussed in our production, which I think is very topical today, we're led by an extraordinary director, the Broadway choreographer and director Josh Rhodes, and his primary thesis about the play is it's about the dangers of neutrality. What happens when you decide to just sort of sit on the fence and see how things go and then pick a side versus having morals and ethics and standing up when something is wrong and being willing to deal with the repercussions of taking that kind of stand. That's why I think it's lasted so long. The music's fantastic. The lyrics are fantastic. But it's this essence of the story is much more complicated, I think, than we give it credit to. And that's why I think it stood the test of time.
What advice would you give to a young listener tonight who thinks that he or she wants to have a career as a singer?
I would say a couple of things. The first thing is study. Get into lessons, whether you want to be a singer or an actor or any kind of performer, dancer. Get into class, get into lessons, get with someone that is going to push you and help you reach your potential. You have to work. The other thing I would say is immerse yourself in the culture. Go to concerts, go to plays, go to musicals, go to films and television, and watch television. Live your life. Get out there and perform as much as you can, because a lot of times you learn by doing. Apply the things that you learn in class and in your lessons. And the second thing I will say is there are so many talented people in the world. I've worked with the depth of talent that I've seen in my career is sort of unfathomable to me. But one thing is true. You have to be kind. You have to treat people with kindness and respect. I don't care if you're the most famous person in the world and you're the reason that people are coming and buying those tickets. If you're unkind, it's just not worth it. It's never worth it. So treat everyone with respect. That includes your directors and choreographers and music directors, your fellow castmates, especially your crew who's helping make sure that you're safe, your designers who are helping you look good, the front of house people that are making sure people get in to see you. Any fans, you have to treat people with kindness because they've gone out of their way to show their gratitude. But work hard and be kind. I think that's true of what makes a successful performer, but I think it's applicable to all of humanity, you know?
Telly, somebody watches you perform. is mesmerized, looks at your achievements at a young age, and they say, this person's had a fairy tale life, a perfect life. Telly Sessions, how many times have you heard the words, no thanks?
More than I can count. More than I can count. I said earlier when we were speaking that a lot of my job and the job of my colleagues and friends that do this as well is auditioning, constantly putting ourselves out there. And we're told no. I know I'm told no much more than I'm told yes. And I've thankfully been told yes a lot. I don't know if I could put a percentage on it, but I would say I get 10% of the things that I audition for, maybe. Now that also means that I have a good agent and that I get to audition a lot, but it's not personal. I've been doing this for a long time. It's still you feel disappointment, certainly, especially if you're emotionally invested in a piece and it's something that you think would really make an impact on your life, but you got to keep going. Know that one no today means that there's a yes around the corner. It's just for some reason the universe is saying this is not the thing for you right now. The other thing I'll tell you is there have been multiple times that I have it happened with Anastasia. I auditioned for the original company of Anastasia, and I didn't get it. I think it was between me and another person, but I know that when an opening came around, they called me and had remembered me, and that was, over a year and a half later, and then I ended up in the company. You never know what's going to happen, and that's why I say it's so important to be kind, keep working hard, and not wait for anything. Don't wait for your life to happen. Don't wait for your career to happen. Keep searching for things that inspire you.
Telly Sessions, if the North Carolina Tar Heels or North Carolina University ever creates a Hall of Fame of alumni that have it, Michael Jordan would be there. Telly Sessions would be there. So
you're very kind. Thank you.
Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, my friend. Great talking to you.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.
Believe in yourself.